Imagine for a second that you are 19 years old, maybe 20. You have essentially zero life experience. You've been plucked out of your suburban life in the United States and dropped into a Nordic country known for three things.
Right. Endless winters, a culture of extreme personal reserve.
And a language that linguists classify as a Category 4 difficulty.
Basically impossible. And you're not there on vacation. You're wearing a cheap suit, you have a name tag, and you have a very specific, high-pressure mission to accomplish every single day.
Exactly. You are basically a kid trying to navigate a world of confusing traffic laws, intense bureaucracy, and on top of all that, heavy spiritual expectations.
So today we are not talking about the polished, glossy version of missionary work.
No. We are doing a deep dive into the gritty, often hilarious, and surprisingly complex reality of it.
We are looking at a really fascinating set of memoirs and firsthand accounts titled Experiences 2.
Yeah, these are stories from missionaries serving in Finland, specifically in the 1970s.
Mostly between 1972 and 1975. And they were all under the leadership of a mission president named President Wade.
And what I love about this collection is that it's not a theology textbook. It reads more like a survival guide.
Written by people who are just figuring it out as they go.
We've got car crashes, we've got polite police raids, and we've got what I can only describe as like MacGyver-style legal forgery.
It really highlights the mission of this deep dive, which is to look past that generic image of two guys in white shirts and see the human comedy of errors underneath.
It asks a really interesting question.
How do you find spiritual success when you can barely navigate a roundabout?
Speaking of roundabouts, let's unpack that immediately, because nothing says welcome to Finland like a traffic accident caused by a fundamental misunderstanding of geometry.
This is a classic story from a missionary named Greg Pearson. He was working in the mission office in Helsinki and had to drive the mission car.
Okay.
Now, for anyone listening who has driven in the US or most of Europe, you know the rule in a roundabout. You yield to the cars already in the circle.
Great. If you are in the circle, you keep moving. If you're entering, you wait. Simple.
Well, in Finland, at least in the 1970s, at certain intersections, the rule was often the opposite. The driver entering from the right had the right of way.
You have to stop inside the circle.
You had to stop inside the circle to let people in. It's totally counterintuitive.
It feels completely wrong.
It was. So Pearson is cruising through a roundabout, thinking he's king of the road, applying American logic,
Oh no.
and he is totally oblivious to the car coming from his right.
Oh.
Oh, yes,
Yep.
he plows right into a car, total wreck. But here is where it gets really interesting.
It's not the crash that matters, it's the reaction.
Exactly. Pearson is terrified. He calls his leader, President Wade, expecting to get chewed out for destroying a vehicle.
Of course.
But Wade's first urgent question is simply, "Are you safe?"
That sets the tone, doesn't it? It's people over property. But wait, the best part of the story is the other driver.
I love this detail. He hit a candy salesman.
A candy salesman?
And instead of a lawsuit or a fist fight, the salesman gets out, checks that everyone is okay, and actually gives the missionaries candy before they part ways.
See, that is the surreal nature of these stories. You wreck a car, you think your life is over, and you end up eating candy on the side of the road in Helsinki.
It's this mix of high stakes and total absurdity. And that absurdity extends to the living conditions, too.
You mean the walking on water story?
That's the one. From Margaret Bridges. She was one of the few sister missionaries mentioned.
And she's out in the countryside for a funeral.
Right. Rural Finland in the 70s. She's staying in a house with no plumbing. To bathe, they have to pump water from a well, heat it up, and use the sauna.
Which sounds charming until you actually have to do it every day.
Exactly. But to visit another relative, they have to cross a frozen lake.
So she literally walks across the ice.
Giving her the lifelong bragging right that she actually walked on water.
It's funny, but it also just paints this picture of the isolation, you know, the physical environment they were dealing with.
They weren't just preaching. They were hauling water and hoping the ice held.
But sometimes the environment pushes back. There's this fantastic story from David Roberry about the printing press fiasco.
Oh, yeah. This one felt like a scene from a sitcom.
It really does.
So Roberry is working in the mission office. He's the mission secretary. So he's basically the operations manager.
And they're printing their own materials for these big regional meetings.
Right, on an industrial black ink printing press to save money. And this isn't a laser printer. This is a beast.
A loud beast.
He describes the sound as a rhythmic, got you, yet you. And because they have this really strict schedule, They are behind on printing.
So they're running this industrial machine at 10:30 at night.
In a residential apartment building, the mission office was on the second floor.
Right above an elderly neighbor's apartment.
And these young guys are just so focused on the work that they're totally oblivious.
And just shaking the foundations of the building.
Until the doorbell rings.
And a calm voice says,
"Police."
The police. Now, in the U.S., a police visit at 10:30 p.m. is a high-stress event.
But here, the officers were very professional. They just explained, look, the lady upstairs is trying to sleep. The missionaries were just mortified.
They had no idea. I love the resolution, though.
It's great. They didn't just stop. They went out the next day, bought beautiful red roses, and visited the neighbor to apologize.
Which is such a great example of how they navigated their mistakes. You know, clumsy Americans making noise, but they fixed it with a personal human touch.
So we've got physical mishaps, cars, and noise complaints. But then the deep dive shifts into something I found even more stressful.
Bureaucracy. The mission office sounds like it was basically a crisis management firm.
It was. And David Roberry seemed to be the fixer. There's this incredible story about a passport crisis that highlights just how much autonomy these 19-year-olds had.
This one stressed me out just reading it.
So a former missionary, who is now a U.S. citizen just visiting Finland for a summer job, gets stopped at the Helsinki airport. His passport has expired.
And he's trying to leave. The stakes are really high.
Very high. His wife is pregnant and due any day. And he has to start law school at BYU in, like, 48 hours.
He is in total panic mode.
And the Finnish authorities are demanding a police report to prove he had good conduct while he lived there. But he lived in multiple cities. It's a bureaucratic nightmare.
So Roberry steps in.
Roberry improvises. Hmm. He figures out which city the guy lived in the longest and gets a report from them. But the U.S. Embassy says, we need this translated.
And this is where the genius or the madness kicks in.
He doesn't send it out to a translation firm. He translates it himself. He types up a letter on official mission letterhead.
But he knows it needs to look really official to get past the border agents.
This is my favorite detail in the entire document. He goes out and buys these expensive postage stamps. Not just any stamps, but the ones featuring the Finnish heraldic lion.
The lion.
He sticks them on the letter. Then he takes the church's corporate embossing seal, which is just meant for internal documents, and he crunches it right over the stamps.
He essentially craft-projected a legal document. He created a raised seal over a postage stamp to mimic a government certification.
He did, and it worked.
No way.
The officials saw the lion, they saw the official-looking crimp, and they stamped the passport. The guy got his emergency passport and made it home.
That is just so bold. It shows that being a missionary wasn't just about teaching lessons. It was about solving impossible problems with whatever you had on hand.
And sometimes solving crimes.
Yes. The stolen checks.
This is another Roberry story. President Wade is away in Germany. A Finnish postal inspector calls the office.
And he tells them checks sent from Zions Bank money from parents to their kids were disappearing in the mail.
Which is a nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
You're a kid in a foreign land. And your money is just vanishing.
So what happened?
The inspector reveals they caught the guy. A postal employee had been stealing them. But here's the key. The inspector personally delivers the recovered, uncashed checks to Roberry at the mission office.
Wow. That shows the level of trust the mission had built with the authorities.
It does. They weren't treated as suspects or nuisances. They were treated as a respected institution. It really paints a picture of these young men having to grow up very, very fast.
So let's pivot to that. The actual purpose of their being there, proselytizing. And the documents suggest that the biggest barrier wasn't theology, it was the language.
Finnish is notoriously difficult. It's an agglutinative language.
Agglutinative.
It means they stack suffixes onto words to change meaning. So one root word can have hundreds of forms.
For a young American, that must be paralyzing. You're terrified to speak because you know you're going to sound like a toddler.
Exactly. And the barbershop story illustrates this paralysis perfectly.
This is Jerry Olson and a newer missionary, Elder Dennis.
Right. They go to their regular barber, a woman named Sister Makinen. Missionaries have been going to her for years, just getting haircuts, keeping it professional.
Just a business transaction.
Exactly. But Elder Dennis, who barely speaks the language, he's a greenie. He decides to break the fourth wall.
He decides, I'm going to tell her about the gospel.
In broken, clumsy Finnish, Olson, the senior companion, admits he was embarrassed. He's sitting there cringing, wanting to sink into the barber chair.
We have all been there. That secondhand embarrassment.
But then the room goes silent. and Sister Makinen says something that shocks them.
Oh, what'd she say?
She says, I used to be a member of that church. Well, I guess I still am.
Wow.
Turns out her ex-husband had forbidden her from attending years ago.
Yeah.
But now she was free to choose. She just needed someone to bring it up.
So because this one greeny missionary was willing to be awkward,
she and her daughter came back to church. It counters the idea that you have to be this polished salesman to be effective. The awkwardness was almost an asset.
It's authenticity, and it connects to the work ethic President Wade instilled.
Right. He had this rule. Office staff work 9 to 5 on administrative stuff, passports, cars, supplies. But then from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., they had to be out knocking on doors.
No excuses.
No excuses.
Yeah.
And Roberry notes that despite having full-time office jobs, the office staff had the most baptisms in the district. They were just grinding it out.
Which leads us to a really profound concept mentioned in the texts.
Man's extremity is God's opportunity.
This is from Bruce Smith's account. It's the idea that success only comes after you are totally exhausted.
Smith describes tracting, that's the term for door knocking in East Helsinki, and it's brutal. They're getting rejection after rejection. Their tracking book is full of NI, not interested, and slam.
I can feel that fatigue. You just want to go home, take off the suit, and sleep.
His companion wants to quit. He says, we aren't doing any good.
But Smith pushes. He starts bargaining.
He says, one more building. Then when that's done, three more staircases.
They are negotiating with their own exhaustion.
Exactly. They get to the very last staircase of the very last building, top floor. They knock, and a Swedish mother invites them in.
And this is where we meet Heidi.
Yes. Smith describes her vividly. He says she looked like Joan of Arc, a 17-year-old girl who seemed to be waiting for something better.
But there is a catch. She smoked.
She did. And for the listener, under the LDS Word of Wisdom health code, smoking is a deal breaker. You can't be baptized if you smoke.
So Smith sees this and thinks, well, that's it. We lost her.
But her reaction is fascinating. She says she had tried to quit before for health reasons and couldn't. But when she read that God wanted her to, she just...
stopped turkey.
Cold turkey. The point being, if they had quit one staircase earlier, which any reasonable person would have done, that connection never happens.
The miracle was strictly a function of persistence past the point of reason.
It was. And there was another story about persistence that plays out over a much longer timeline, the Hyvinkää connection.
This is from Arnold Hamari. He's in a town called Hyvinkää, looking for a pianist for their small congregation.
And they find an 18-year-old named Antti.
And Antti has a coffee problem.
A coffee problem. And we should clarify, in Finland, coffee isn't just a beverage. It's a cultural institution.
Finns drink more coffee per capita than almost anyone else.
So asking a Finn to give up coffee is like asking an American to give up cars.
So what do the missionaries do?
They go to a health food store and buy him Pioneer Coffee, which is this grain-based substitute. They're practically coaching him through withdrawal.
It's a sweet, if slightly funny, gesture.
But Antti faces opposition. His father throws away his Book of Mormon, but Antti persists and gets baptized. Hamari eventually gets transferred and goes home. End of story.
Not quite.
10 years later, Hamari is in the U.S. Air Force, stationed in Spain. He's at an English-speaking church service. He sees a family walking in and realizes the mother is Finnish.
Small world.
You get smaller. She shows him slides from her mission in Finland. And in her photos, Hamari sees Antti.
No way.
Antti had not only stayed in the church, he'd become a district leader. He was leading other missionaries.
That's incredible. It's this massive payoff that Hamari never would have seen if not for that random chance meeting in Spain.
It really emphasizes the long tail effect of this work.
Yeah.
You buy a kid some fake coffee in 1972, and 10 years later, you find out he's a leader.
It's touching. And it bridges into the final theme, which is the spiritual manifestations. Amidst the car crashes and the passport stamps, there were these moments of pure spiritual clarity.
Rick McBride talks about this regarding patriarchal blessings. For the listener, can you briefly define what that is?
Sure. In the faith, a patriarchal blessing is a special prayer given once in a lifetime. It's believed to contain personal scripture and guidance specific to that individual.
And McBride is teaching this concept to a Finnish man named Ville Laminen. They stay up all night discussing it.
He describes it physically, chills, goosebumps, a feeling of being overwhelmed by the spirit.
It was a freezing night outside, but he describes this burning clarity. And for McBride, that moment wasn't just for the investigator.
No. 50 years later, McBride became a patriarch himself.
And he looks back on that freezing night in Finland as the moment he truly understood the doctrine he would later minister. It's a beautiful full circle moment.
So when we look at all these stories, the comedic, the bureaucratic, the spiritual, what is the synthesis here? What are we seeing about this experience?
I think we are seeing that the mission experience is equal parts awkward, human stumbling, and profound connection. It dismantles the idea of the super missionary.
Right. These weren't stoic saints. They were kids. They made noise. They crashed cars. They got tired.
But the narrative arc suggests that the flaws were part of the design.
Exactly. That's why the stories matter. Which brings us to a final thought for the listener.
The pattern in these sources is striking. The miracles, the passport fix, the sudden conversion of the barber, finding Heidi on the last stair, almost always occurred right at the breaking point.
When they were exhausted or scared or just completely out of options.
Exactly. So it forces you to ask, is success in these high-pressure environments actually a result of skill? Or is it just a byproduct of the willingness to be uncomfortable?
Maybe the miracle isn't what happens to you, but that you were willing to stay on the staircase long enough for it to happen.
Staying on the staircase.
Ah.
I like that. That's a wrap for this deep dive into the Finland Mission memoirs. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.